11. Philip leaned around the doorframe into Britt the Younger's bedroom in a manner he had designed and mentally rehearsed to appear casual and spur of the moment.
"Hey, I'm going to go for a walk."
Britt the Younger turned away from her yellowed original Macintosh computer and looked toward Philip. "Okay." Philip's eyes narrowed.
"Okay?"
"Yeah," Britt said, turning back to her computer. "Okay, whatever. Hey, before you go."
"Yes?"
"Can you think of an example of a way that people write down and communicate a series of physical movements so that they can teach them to another person?"
"What, do you mean like dance choreography?"
"Yeah, that's the example I came up with. I also thought of drills and square dancing, but those are still kinds of dance. I'm just wondering if there's a better fit. Can you think of another?" Philip thought for a moment.
"I guess musical notation would fit that description. The musicians have to do the same things at the same time every time."
"Yeah, that's not bad. It's still music-based, but still interesting. Thanks. Have fun."
"What?"
"On your walk? Have fun." Philip shrugged.
"Okay."
Philip walked through the living room where Nick was doing the dusting. Philip said,
"I'm just popping out for a quick walk. Need me to grab a chicken for you? I promise I'll do it this time."
"I told you don't worry about the chicken, Philip. It wasn't a problem. If you like, you could get me some butter."
"Butter? Done."
Philip stepped out the door. Martin watched as Philip emerged from Britt the Younger's front door, looking distracted and in a hurry. Preoccupied as he was, Philip didn't notice the unusually light foot traffic. He had the entire section of path completely to himself. Philip also failed to notice the fact that while it was a beautiful cloudless day, there was a dark shadow directly over him, blotting out the sun and growing larger. Had he noticed the shadow, he might have looked up and seen the large black trapezoid streaking down out of the sky directly toward him. The dark mass fell silently, then came to an instant stop 30 feet above Philip's head. He remained oblivious, walked down the path, stepped into a blind alley between two buildings, then teleported away. Martin stood motionless on the roof of a nearby building, his staff outstretched, projecting the force field holding the object in midair. He twirled the staff in tiny circles, causing the object to spin. As he spun the object, Martin saw writing engraved into one side that said, 16 tons. Martin looked around and saw only one other person present, lurking in the alley between two buildings across the way. Luckily, it was the person Martin was hoping to find.
"Pants dried out, I trust?" Martin said.
The goblin stepped out of the shadows, looked up at Martin, and lowered his hood, revealing his bald head, pointed ears, and inhumanly sharp teeth.
"I assume so. I took them off rather than letting them dry on me."
"I hear doing that with jeans makes them fit better."
"I was wearing slacks."
"A goblin in slacks?"
"Dress for the job you want, not the one you have. I see you haven't repaired your robe after my feathered friends used you as a seed bell."
"Yeah, I kind of like it this way," Martin said. "It feels more broken in. So, look, about this 16-ton weight you just tried to drop on Philip, I gotta say, I'm not happy with you about it. Although you do score some points for the Monty Python reference."
"Thanks. I considered going with a giant foot, but I found the little fart sound distasteful."
Martin nodded and flicked his staff upward. The 16-ton weight flew back up into the sky, disappearing over the city's edge and splashing down in the ocean.
"I sort of expected you to stick with the board game motif. I worried we'd find Philip dead with a wishbone-shaped hole in his sternum and a glowing, buzzing nose."
"I'm not trying to kill him, Martin. I don't want to kill anybody. That's why I blocked this section of the path off today, so there'd be no bystanders. We both know Philip's invulnerable. The only danger your friend is in is danger of getting distracted. That's what I'm trying to do. And in the end, I'd be doing him a favor."
"If that's true, tell me what you're distracting him from. If you're telling the truth, maybe I can help.
No, Martin. I have to handle this on my own. Speaking of which...
The goblin started waving his arms in the same showy manner he had when he made the ravens attack Martin.
I'm not accomplishing anything standing here arguing with you, so...
Martin thrust the head of his staff toward the goblin and said, Pika Pulvaro! Cutting him off mid-sentence. A sparkling white light radiated from the bust of Santo at the top of Martin's staff, illuminating the goblin. He stopped swinging his arms, stood still for half a second, then let out a high, anguished moan and started furiously scratching himself.
What did you do?
Martin smiled.
I learned from our last encounter. I decided to forget embarrassment as a weapon and start using discomfort. You're the first person to experience my new itch ray. Now, tell me, what's going on? Or it's about to get real humid. I'm talking Florida in July humid.
You're clever, Martin, but you forgot one thing.
What?
Just because I'm itchy doesn't mean I can't do magic.
The goblin whipped his arms around in a series of wide gestures, then went back to furiously scratching himself. Martin heard a strange noise, more an assortment of noises that combined oddly. There was a base layer of scrabbling, scraping noises, with a counterpoint of squeaking and a dull undertone of rustling, all which got louder with each passing second. It was like a combination of the sound of nails on a chalkboard and two pieces of styrofoam rubbing against each other. It seemed to come from below the building on which he was standing. As it grew louder, Martin couldn't help but step closer to the edge to see what was making the awful noise. He saw nothing on the ground below, but as he looked, a wave of brown and gray lumps poured over the roof's front edge and advanced toward him. His primitive instincts identified what they were well before he got a good look at them. They were rats, hundreds of rats, surging toward him. As the rats formed a swirling pool around his feet, Martin fought down the urge to flee and indulged his urge to talk smack.
You just gonna try swarming me with different animals until something works? Not a great plan.
I agree, the goblin said. Luckily, that's not what I'm doing.
Really? That's what it looks like from here.
Is it? Then why haven't the rats climbed up your legs yet?
Martin looked down at the rats, which, as the goblin said, had yet to make any effort to climb onto him. Instead, they remained in a writhing heap, crowded all around his feet, their wiry pink tails stuck in the air as they gnawed on the surface beneath him. The roof on which Martin was standing gave way, weakened by the chewing and broken by the combined weight of him and the rats. As he fell into the shop beneath, he had only a fraction of a second to register that the Atlanteans inside stood on any furniture they could as a swirling circle of rodents gnawed at the floor. Martin landed on the rats, crashed through the floor, and fell to another pool of rats below. He broke through that floor, landed on more rats, crashed through again, landed on more rats, crashed through again, and finally came to a rest where Atlantis's solid diamond outer wall finally curved inward enough for him and the rats to land on it and slide to a stop. Martin sat, growling for a second, then held his staff out above him and flew straight up through all of the holes he'd just created until he erupted back out into the open air, a cloud of rats flying in all directions. He flew through the air in a graceful arc, landing in front of the goblin with enough force to crack the paving stones beneath his feet.
Oh, you're back,
the goblin said.
I probably should have just split, but I kind of wanted to see the look on your face. Anyway, you were gone just long enough for me to call a friend.
Far above the city, up in the sky, Martin heard an eardrum-shattering shriek. Martin looked up and saw an eagle. At first, he thought the eagle was quite close to him, but then he realized it only looked close because it was the size of a small airplane. It almost seemed to flap its wings in slow motion as it descended, still screeching at an ear-splitting volume. As it drew near, it thrust out talons, each the size of a small child wielding kitchen knives, beckoning for a hug. Martin hunched down, held his staff above him with one arm, and produced a hemispherical force field he hoped would keep him safe. He squeezed his eyes shut and waited for the attack. He heard the screeching and felt the subsonic beating of the giant wings draw closer, sail directly overhead, then recede, as if the bird had merely passed over him. He opened his eyes to follow the immense eagle and watched as it gently plucked the goblin up in its talons before climbing back into the sky. The goblin smiled broadly and waved at Martin, shouting,
"You thought the eagle was here for you? Jeez! Self-absorbed much!"
Just seconds before, Martin had been cowering, dreading the giant eagle's attack. Now Martin took off, flying after the eagle, trying to catch up as quickly as possible. As he gained, he kept his eyes on the goblin clinging to the eagle's claws, nothing but blue sky and the sea behind him, looking at Martin with a mixture of amusement and confusion on his face, still scratching the small of his back with his free hand. As Martin drew within shouting range, the goblin asked,
"How long is this itching gonna last?
An hour or so?"
"Why, what do you think it accomplishes? It didn't stop me from doing anything."
"Not yet, but you'll think twice about messing with me again, knowing that there's an hour of itching in it for you."
"I wasn't messing with you to begin with."
"You were messing with Philip. Anyone who messes with Philip gets messed with by me."
The goblin laughed.
"I know," Martin said. "Passive voice. I'm working off the top of my head here."
The goblin kept laughing.
"It's not that. Bad style is the least of what's making you sound stupid right now."
"Whatever. Hey, if you can do magic and you wanted to get away, why not just teleport out? Why mess around with the whole giant eagle thing?"
"Showmanship is very important. But if it's all wasted on you..."
Martin shouted,
"No, wait!"
But it was too late. The goblin teleported away. The giant eagle faded out of existence, leaving Martin flying alone. He slowed to a stop, hovered in empty space above the Mediterranean Sea, then teleported himself back to Atlantis.